This is Hacker Public Radio episode 3351 for Monday the 7th of June 2021. Today's show is entitled HPR Community News for May 2021 and is part of the series HPR Community News. It is hosted by HPR volunteers and is about 66 minutes long and carries an explicit flag. The summary is the HPR matrons are doing the rounds.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by archive.org. Support universal access to all knowledge by heading over to archive.org/donate.
Hi everybody, welcome to another edition of Hacker Public Radio. This time it's community news for May 2021. Joining me this evening is...
Hello, it's Dave Morris.
How are you, Dave?
I'm good. It's 15:15 here, so it's not quite evening yet, but who's counting?
16:15 here, Dave, is it closer?
yeah, I'll let you up.
Actually, there's one thing I noticed when I moved to the Netherlands. You know, in Ireland, time is a flexible thing. You know, half an hour either way, you'd be grand. Here at the cashiers in the supermarket will switch from good afternoon to good evening at 1800 exactly on the button.
Oh yes, I quite like that actually. I suppose. There you go.
Right, anyway, HPR Community News is not about local traditions in European countries. It is about Hacker Public Radio, which in actual fact is a community on the interwebs. And where the shows are submitted by random listeners, very similar to, in fact, identical to, people like your good self listening to the show. So that is why we always take time to welcome the new hosts. And the new hosts this month are Dave...
Deafening silence. Nobody this month, I'm afraid.
I'm sure there's a lot of people out there feeling very guilty right now. You know who you are. We expect better of you. Okay, that's enough about that, Dave. My best matron's voice. Right, where were we? What we do? Yes. Oh, bit of a reminder. Yes, HPR Community News is the idea is the janitors, who are the people who keep HPR running administratively from day to day, not necessarily those who we're just some of the community members. We go through what has been happening in the HPR community for the last month, most importantly going through every show, so you are at least every show gets some feedback. So we'll start with that, and the first show last month was HPR Community News.
Yes, to which there was no feedback.
There are no feedback. What do we cover, Dave?
What, last month?
I would have thought there was loads to discuss.
You would. Yeah. We did an add-on episode as well a bit later on then.
Yeah, that's true.
But the more contentious stuff, maybe? I don't know. We'll wait and see if we got any comments on that one.
Okay. Looking into CEPH storage solution, which was by Daniel Pearson, and he also had a YouTube series on this. Data objects, object store daemons, that sort of thing. Basically, from what I could get, it was a bit like an S3, Amazon S3, but that you run yourself. Very detailed. Lots of information in there if anyone was interested.
That was the only bit that really I understood. but it sounds interesting, worth having a look at if you're into that type of thing.
Yeah, particularly if there's you want to run your own cloud in your own data centers, for example.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then Enigma came with Pandas Part 2, and this was a continuing discussion about favorite Python module pandas, which is in the little bit of Python series. And this is the tool for extracting data from spreadsheets and CVSs and comma separated
CSVs
files.
Yes, it's powerful stuff. It sounds like a lot of good stuff here, and quite a nice way of getting into this type of data. There are other ways, obviously, but writing org scripts or set scripts or something is maybe not the best thing. So
and of course, if you say CSV three times in a row, who turns up?
Our good friend, Be Easy. Who said in his first comment, he said, another great show. Thanks for another great show. I look forward to your next one. As your use of pd.apply in lieu of np.select, here's my two cents. Apply is more readable in most cases, but select is more performant. When performance matters, or when the data set is very large, you might want to use np.select. For instance, when using np.select in your example here, the output was 10 times faster on my PC.
Wow.
Gives an example. Unfortunately, he tried to use Markdown, the days we're going to, likelihood of us putting Markdown in the comments seems probably a little bit slow, but a bit low, I should say. But interesting example, which I won't read out. And he says, finally, in many cases, the readability can trump the need for speed. I just wanted to give a counterpoint.
And then he followed that up with one more speed gain. If you really want to fly, you can turn on Pandas series to numpty arrays. For your example, I got twice as fast as the regular NP select, so 10 times faster. Wow.
That was NumPy, by the way.
Yeah.
Numpty in Scotland means you're an idiot.
Yes, that's why I said it that way, dude.
Which appeals to me. I'm sure it doesn't. Nobody else will get that.
Yeah, it's not the first time people have leveled that one at me. And I'm sure it won't be the last. So the following day, Linux in-laws, if you're listening, the one and only Linux kernel contributor panel. Now, this was quite an interesting gathering of people.
Yeah.
They did well to put this together, truth be told.
Indeed, it is some heavyweights here, and got some really interesting things to say. It was, as you say, congratulations on having got together such a team.
Very good. He didn't actually list the panel members, which is a bit...
No, he didn't. You're quite right. And I was just looking through the... I think he mentioned them in the show, because my notes say some impressive people, so it's just presumably they were listed. But it would have been nice to have had some sort of bio or something like that in the notes, wouldn't it?
Yeah, let's add a comment to that show asking for... we need to update that. Mm-hmm. Didn't necessarily buy the argument about the benevolent dictator for life, and that gives you carte blanche to be. Didn't necessarily buy that argument, but that was countered by during the show as well. So that was quite good.
Mm-hmm. Not a great believer in. Benevolent dictators of any sort, because, you know, things can change.
Yeah. Well, it's the part is about the welcoming community. The benevolent dictator is another thing. Jury's still out on that one, but... Okay, Layer Mask Project. This is the GIMP, and this is Ahuka, who chugs away at basically... an entire series of stuff. And I must say, I am learning so much from this. And again, some of these shows, you're going, well, God, that's kind of obvious, isn't it? And then by the end of the show, you're going, okay, I really would never, obvious though it may have been, I would never have known this and he's just presenting it in a fashion that you don't need to learn it yourself.
No, it's great. It'll definitely be the time when I want to pull GIMP out and start doing some of this sort of stuff. This will be a great place to go and find or follow the links, actually. So the links are brilliant.
Yep. And true to his word, Taj put together a podcasting how-to on getting the microphone, what microphone to pick. And this is going to be linked to in the series on how to get the best audio.
Yep. This is really good. I really enjoyed this.
It's a step-by-step. I like it.
Yeah. And although I've fiddled around with microphones and done stuff and knew they were dynamic and condenser and stuff, I didn't know it, this level of information. And you know, there's a lot to be learned there. I have a condenser mic, and that explains why when somebody the other side of the house is scratching themselves, you can hear it. Not that many. There is nobody scratchy here at the moment. But when I had a cat, the cat was always making a racket. So shall I read Trey's comment?
Please do. Yeah.
Trey says, "Great episode. Thanks for the advice. Looking forward to the next episodes in this series."
Yep. Excellent.
Very much agree.
My current devices, a list, short list of tablets and phones that I'm using these days. And sadly, it is a JWP. Sadly, no open source handheld devices these days, but Android may count though. Yes. But it's also, it was nice to get a rundown on his devices, because it kind of confirms my own suspicions that I want to get some tablets for the house when we move back in. And there's, you know, what solution do you pick if you want an open source one? Only thing I see now is the Pinebook. That's pretty much it.
Yep. I know. It's my daughter just bought a new M1 iPad because she says there's nothing. Well, she's an artist in her spare time. So what else could I use? You know, possibly one of the Microsoft ones, but I don't know anything about them. But, you know, she has very little choice in what she could use and what software and so on.
Yep. So breaking the cardinal guideline, JWP did two shows in a row. He and JWP and Klaatu see me after class. Although technically when Klaatu does it, he's doing his posting different series. But okay, we'll see. Oh, we'll be talking about that later. So it's amazing, actually. You can go years without something happening on HPR, like triggering of the guidelines. And then in the 1 month, four or five different things where people didn't read the guidelines. So anyway, we'll talk. Don't want to pick anybody out individually, JWP, because well, I shouldn't be picking at JWP because I know that man has guns, so but I can always buy him a good beer, and then that hopefully will make him feel better. Anyway, this is a great rundown on the state of Pine 64, bordering on a paid advertisement, JWP. Following on from his, oh, suddenly I now do have an open source tablet. See what's happening here, Dave?
Yeah. This is most interesting, though. I knew so little about these things. It was good to hear his summaries.
I must say I have not had great luck with Pine 64 as a project as yet. And I think that's just bad luck on my part. So. But I really do support what they're trying to do.
Yeah. I'm tempted, but I just bought myself a Fairphone because my old phone is giving up. A OnePlus One is very, very, very old now. I'm not running after a Pine phone quite yet, but it's enormously tempting.
I got one, and Yeah, it's I changed some setting on it, and now the keyboard the screen instantly locks, and I can't, once you type anything to unlock it, the screen, it goes back into sleep mode and the screen is locked again. So yeah, I'm sure I can fix it, but it was just after the saga I went through to get it, I just lost all will to live with regard to it, and sometimes you
See, that
just
would be frustrating, yeah.
leave it there. However, what I did see was their keyboard thing, which I will get, the keyboard battery. And basically, you've got a mobile phone device that you can have a full keyboard, like, back in the day. And then I'll put some sort of basic operating system on it that, so it's not going away. It's just I don't have the energy for it right now.
Understood.
The InfoSec podcast. General information security, privacy and security. This is where Trey is going through podcast recommendations for the information security arena, and he's broken it down into several different sections. And I'm enjoying this quite a lot because it's nice and bite-sized.
Yeah, he's doing a good job of giving a comprehensive list with obviously good URLs and stuff, and nice punchy summaries of what it is he's talking about. So yeah, it's an amazing resource for this type of thing if you want to get into it.
And I've had requests for this sort of stuff. People have asked me for podcast recommendations in the past, specifically related to security. So this is a great breakdown. Long may they continue. And excellent show notes, obviously.
Yes, they are. They're nice too. I just turn them into HTML. He sends them in as I can't remember, as plain text, I think. But yeah, they're really nice to work with.
Yeah, and the following day we had a podcast recommendation submitted by myself after I heard her car on the Clatous thing, GNU World Order.
Oh, GNU World Order. Yep.
Yeah, and I thought, oh, that's definitely something for HPR, and he kindly CC0'd his podcast so that he could do that. So there you go. That's good.
Excellent. Excellent. Yep. It's an interesting sound. I've not listened to the podcast yet, but it certainly sounds like it is well worth a listen.
Yeah, it's I've had a few listens while I was waiting for people, and yeah, not really. It's not that I'm particularly into anarchy or whatever, but it's no harm to. It's something that has always been for me, where people have said, "Oh, anarchist," okay, punk rock, that sort of thing. It's something you don't talk about and don't discuss and don't think about, but it's if Klaatu is saying this is the way to go, then it's worth opening your mind to at least the arguments, and you can then at least with comfort dismiss them if you wish.
There was some talk show I listened to, his podcast, in the past few months, where I forget what the topic was, but they were saying one of the people we're going to talk to is an anarchist. This is an academic in a UK university, and there was all the sort of sniggering and tittering of, oh, of course, you know, there's been a hell of an awful piece of publicity done against the concept of anarchism, with huge ignorance as to what it actually means. And she did an amazing job of explaining what the anarchist view on this subject was. Like I say, I can't remember what it was, but yeah, I was just impressed at the clear-sightedness that was shown there. So yeah, something from my
Yeah, I
point of view
think
well worth looking into.
you have to quote The Princess Bride on this. I do not think this word means what you think it means.
Yeah, very true. Yes, that's very much the case. But it's one of these things where you could say the powers that be have decided this is not for the hoi polloi. So, you know, poison it in their minds, and they won't want to have anything to do with it, you know.
So the following day we had the first in the New Year shows from Honky, and this was another one that I had to space out every 2 weeks. It was a pain in the ass, but that amount of pain in the ass was nothing compared to what editing a 26-hour show was. So thank you very much, Hunky. We may need to come up with a way to do mass uploads. Is that something that we need to do? Anyway.
It's worth a thought. Yeah.
Yeah, we'll explain later what we're on about.
People have a big block of stuff, then yeah.
Doing one and then putting them in, and it can be a pain.
Yep, it's really designed around the single shot thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
If you have a lot that you want to submit, then it's a whole different ball game.
So this was the first show, and it was about obviously COVID, Brexit. Everybody should be using ISO 8601. Obviously, that was me filling that out.
What a surprise.
And stuff.
Good. It was an interesting thing. I had joined in on this bit of the whole recording. Probably got a little bit too tired later on, but it was good to listen back to it, and it was good to be involved. Actually, I enjoyed that.
Yeah, I have been known to be hostile in the past to the HPR show due to limitations of my own making. Namely, I felt it should come out straight away, when in actual fact, no, it shouldn't. But I'm really glad Hunky is doing it, and it's really nice to listen back to it. You know, sometimes when a three-hour show drops into your feed, you're going, OMG, do I really want to listen to this? And considering I've been on some of it, but the amount of stuff that you missed,
discussions. I've gone through the same process, and then you know it ends, and I think, oh, that's a shame. Oh, when's the next one? You know? Yeah. I was just enjoying
another
that
3-hour show. Okay. Anyway, Hunky writes, thanking. I would like to thank Dave Morris for fixing the show notes. Thanks, Dave.
You're welcome, Hunky. That's fine. He surprised me by going through all of the shows and thanking all the people involved, which will be obvious as time goes on. That was a very nice touch, I thought.
So I like that the boat is stuck, which is a dramatic reading by Daniel Pearson. We had a little bit of problem. A little bit of issues with this one as well, so that was funny. We got this one released under a Creative Commons non-commercial, no derivatives 3.0 unported license. But I want to tell you that this article and hearing him reading it was just cheered my day up and made all the work associated with this, which wasn't too much, just I emailed the person for the permission. Oh, made it all worth it. So that was, I really did like this this show.
Yes. I'd read the actual item because it was mentioned all over the place on Mastodon and various places. I really enjoyed the reading of it. That was nicely done.
Yes.
And the fact that it was brought to HBR's attention, I thought was really cool as well. You know, it's an example of taking a thing where everybody is getting really worked up about it, or at least maybe we're supposed to be getting worked up about it, but taking a very different view of it, and I thought that it was completely brilliant.
Yeah, I think if there's one show this month that you want to put a smile on your face, go listen to this one.
Yep, very much so. We had one comment from M. Pardo, who said, it's the most enjoyable article I've ever read, with the possible exception of those that might have been more enjoyable. Excellent. That's a bit of a qualification. An excellent dramatic reading as well. Cheers.
Oh, fantastic. Following day, this is one of the most boring ones that you're going to get on the network this month. However, I would strongly advise anybody who has the word troubleshooting or third line support in their title to be making copious notes of this one. And that is Clatoo's episode on OpenSSL, S_client, which works like Telnet and allows you to do the Telnet-y type stuff that we used to do to troubleshoot email connections and that sort of thing. And there's a web server up that you can connect to it. Does that on SSL ports. So if you ever wanted to connect to a mailbox to see if it was working, you would tell that to the port, you know, the POP3 port or something, SMTP port, and then, you know, say hello and log in and do your commands. But yep. That's not possible over TLS. Mm-hmm. And what this allows you to do is do that thing. It does the SSL connection as well. So very good stuff.
Yeah, I knew nothing of this. I have stopped doing this type of thing for the past 11 years now. So, you know, not too surprising. But, had I been faced with needing to do this sort of stuff, then this would have. And it's relatively new, is it? Is it? It's not been around for long. I didn't quite catch whether it was a recent addition to OpenSSL. Certainly wasn't around in the days when I first started using OpenSSL, but still, you know, it's very, very cool. And everybody should know about it, and it's a great way to do this sort of stuff. So yeah, brilliant, excellent, good, very important piece of information.
I put this one up with the day I learned that control or goes back in command history and bash. That's how important this one is.
Yes, indeed. No, it's great. I've yet to find a need for it at home, but, you know, I'll maybe rethink that. I did at one point have a port. If you look through the Cetra services or something, lists all the ports. And I remember noticing there was one marked as password or something. So you could put a password service behind there, which when you poked it with Telnet would come back and give you a password, which is not very secure. But,
okay.
I remember setting that up for people who just could not manage to make passwords. just get one off there. But yeah, it was Telnet, so it's not really much of a solution now I come to think of it.
Right. Next day we had Linux in-laws, politicians and artificial intelligence part 2. This is actually a nice series with some good links in this month.
Yes. They're certainly going into quite a lot of depth with this. Which is good, which is necessary, I think, because it's a multi-layered topic, isn't it? So yeah, beginning to understand a little bit more about what TensorFlow is and stuff.
So the next day, we had Kevin Ahuka with Privacy and Security episode about as someone who has reasons to be on Facebook, I've gotten used to seeing people warn that their account was hacked and we should not accept friend requests from them. It is so common that you would wonder if Facebook had no security at all, but the truth is something different and worth knowing about.
Yeah, wasn't it? I thought this was really good, actually. I did not. I mean, obviously, Facebook is. I don't touch Facebook. I did have an account. I deleted it this year, in fact. Never used it anyway. But yeah, it is obviously a place that's going to be attacked a lot, and this cloning of account business is a very unpleasant attack. And yeah, so good. I didn't know the
good advice that can happen.
So yeah, good advice, as you say.
We got my wife got a SMS or a WhatsApp message from somebody going. And the text was, "Hey, Dad, I got a new phone. Can you add me to your contacts?"
Gee.
Well, yeah. I thought that was actually pretty feckin' clever. You know, you have a 50-50 chance. You're going to hit somebody who's not very tech savvy and go, "Oh, okay." And there we go.
Yeah. So easy.
And then
so easy.
The follow-up from that is that they ring saying that they're somewhere and that they need you to send money. Just that's the second part of the hack, by the way.
Yep. Oh, loads of them like that.
Anyway, challenge for Yurune from JWP. He wants to get Getty serial terminal for a mainframe. So, there you go.
Yeah.
First time I saw somebody doing a challenge via a show, but I approve so far.
No, it's good. It's good. I didn't make a note of what the mainframe was, but presumably an IBM, is it?
It was a HP 700.
That's the terminal.
Yeah.
I don't know what the mainframe... Does mainframe now mean IBM?
One... Slightly odd. I don't know. That would be odd, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would. It wasn't that way in my day. But, yeah. My colleague, one of my ex-colleagues, and I have done a little bit of fiddling around with getting open VMS running on Pis. Well, he's done mm-hmm. the work. I've just sort of been... I used to manage the VMS system at the university I worked at. So he was just explaining what was involved. You can get a license from the HP that owns it now. Yeah, it is. And you can get a hobbyist license and run VMS on a Pi. But you can also build a cluster, build a Pi cluster with VMS, which is, but I not quite sure why you'd want to, except to say,
look forward to hearing the show, Dave.
Well, I'll get my pal Kevin to, who will say, nah, I'm not doing that.
I'll put a bottle or something in front of him and see what happens.
Yeah, I've often said to him, you should come and talk to us about the stuff Primary. You know. Yeah. It's not sure what. Anyway, yeah, it's a ongoing attempt, ongoing project.
Okay. Next day was the second New Year's Eve show, and you could tell I wasn't on because there was no talk about ISO 8601 dates, but there was talk about heated roads and driveways, distilling spirits, geek talk, and single board computers. And Honky says, thanking. I would like to thank Kevin Wisher for running the stream for the New Year show.
Cool.
The fourth programming language, Brian in Ohio, next day. And a little bit of history, what it's about, and more videos on said. And a link to Tlatu's episode on Lisp.
No, this is brilliant. I had this on my list because I haven't done much with Forth, but I did have Forth on my old BBC Micro as a ROM, and I ran a version of Forth to drive a synthesizer that was connected to my Beeb Micro 16-channel synthesizer thingy, which I'll talk about one day. But I've never, this has been on my to-do list for the past 10 years at least. So glad somebody else has done it. And this is really nicely done, very well done. I enjoyed hearing the stuff here that I didn't know about at all. So it's my turn to read a comment,
If you wouldn't mind, yes.
KG says, my experience of Forth at SAO, whatever that is, not sure. So anyway. Interesting show. I was a grad student in Arizona working with the Gamma Ray Group at SAO's Whipple Observatory, just south of
Tucson. I don't find out what that is.
Something Arizona Observatory, I would
imagine. You continue reading and I'll look it up.
My first task was to develop a tracking system for the 10-meter atmospheric Cherenkov telescope. We used Forth running on a Z80 daughter board hosted by an Apple II. The same hardware was used to control a 24-inch telescope. That system was developed by a fellow who'd worked for SAO's satellite tracking program. In fact, several other staff members at Whipple had traveled the planet installing, operating, and maintaining the Baker-Nunn cameras used to photograph satellites and determine their orbital elements. The amusing thing is that a couple of years after I graduated, they replaced the Apple II with the PC and tried to reverse engineer the Forth code.
given that the tracking code wasn't all that complicated, this was sheer insanity. My experience with Forth is that even your own code became rapidly inscrutable, probably a reflection of my coding acumen at the time rather than Forth itself. Yes, it's it is. There are similarities in my mind to Lisp in that you can, because the components are really simple, yet you can build some amazingly complicated things layer upon layer using it. It's not a thing I have any expertise in, really. I've never been that level of a programmer, but yeah, it's quite, I'm sure it's easy to write stuff that is very, very, very hard to understand once you've done it.
I'm trying to find out what SAO is, and all I can find is something in Arizona, and that it is something to do with the telescope.
Yeah, it's not a name I know myself.
So, yes, folks, remember what you think is obvious might not be obvious to everybody else. So, pretty good. Well, if anyone knows what SAO is, tell us.
It's a great comment, though. It's good to hear somebody who's been that close to it. Fantastic.
There's bound to be a show or two in there, Dave, I would have thought myself.
Well, yeah. Forth is a very, very strange language in my limited experience. But yeah, it really makes you think very, very differently.
Yeah, but this guy's working at a gamma ray group in the Whipple Observatory. Right there, that's a show, Dave.
Yeah, oh, quite. Yes, indeed.
Yeah, take one step back here. Hello, my name is KG. Here's my introduction to technology. I just throw a random comment about working on Z80s and Apple IIs and a great big telescope in the sky. Okay, mm-hmm. Might be of interest to hackers. Okay, very good. God, it must be the heat. We're not up to our usual standards here, Dave.
It's fairly warm here, actually, for Edinburgh.
Yeah. Anyway, Trey comes with the third, which is about career and personal development within InfoSec and podcasts that would assist you with that. So I highly recommended you tune in and listen to those shows.
Yeah, good stuff. Excellent stuff.
And then we had the second in Taj's episodes about improving audio, and this time was about equalization, which was kind of interesting actually to hear the actual examples, because you know people describe it, but it's nice to hear it. And to that end, Archer says 72 said, another great episode. Thanks for continuing this series. The samples of types of equalization were enlightening. Also, there are now no crickets from you random outcast.
Yes. So, yeah, I find this another very useful insight. I know how equalization works in a general sense. I've twiddled the things, but I don't have Taj's deeper knowledge. So it was great that he shared it at that level. I found it most useful.
So, yes, the following day we had New Year's episode part 3. The HPR community stops by for a chat, adjusting Nextcloud time and date. Why can't I? Guess who was back? And carries on Doctor Who at the end. And you do the comment, please.
Wow, there was a lot went on in that one, wasn't there? I'd forgotten how much there was. So Honky says, thanking again. I would like to thank Ken Fallon for his job recording this podcast. It was because of his fine recording of the stream that this podcast happened.
News. Thank you very much, Honky. The reason this podcast happened was because you edited and posted. That's why it happened.
Yeah, that was a good one, actually. Yeah, I enjoyed it. And John Colt came on that one, didn't he? He was talking about his recumbent bike.
Yes.
Which was good. Yeah.
There were lots of old voices. Mm. Yeah.
Excellent stuff.
Very good. Next day, Paul Quirk did an ethical analysis of renewable energy and conservation. And have
have you fallen off the end of the month?
I have.
You've done that thing.
And tune in next month to find out what happens there. I meant to do that, Dave.
Of course you did. It was a teaser for next month.
Teaser.
Well done.
So there were five comments to previous shows on the network. And Dave, the love bug, sent in a comment to HPR 2499 back in 2018, which was a Mr. X show in the ham radio series, tuning around in the HF 40 meter band. Having just joined the ranks of amateur radio users, it made sense for me to look at HPR episodes relating to amateur radio. I loved this episode. Very interesting listening to conversations on the 40 meter bands, real hardcore users on 7 megahertz. I did notice that the German station Delta Foxtrot 2 Bravo Oscar wasn't using the NATO phonetic alphabet. Is this a common occurrence?
And Mr. X says, hi, Dave. Sorry for taking a bit of time to reply. I noticed the comment flag up in my RSS reader and then promptly forgot all about it. Things have been crazy busy here. I only remembered thanks to a gentle prod by Dave Morris. Glad you enjoyed the show. By coincidence, I turned my HF set on just last week, something I haven't done for a good long while. I must admit to being a bit rusty with the latest rules and regulations, but I seem to remember that certainly here in the UK, you are encouraged to use the NATO phonetic alphabet. I've certainly heard various stations using different phonetics. Perhaps they think it's easier to hear under noisy conditions, or perhaps they just like the sound of it. Personally, I just stick with the NATO phonetic alphabet. Dave mentioned you recently became an amateur, so many congratulations. I'm sure you'll have lots of fun with the hobby, as there are so many directions it can take you. All the best, Mr. X.
Very good. And Nextcloud application update by Tojet, and he had a script to automatically update Nextcloud, which is probably obvious. And the comment was by, I have no idea how you would pronounce that.
No, I'm not too sure either. Why chouch? I don't know.
Yachuchi. Okay. Safe? ? What if an updated app isn't compatible with the current Nextcloud version? That would be so. Basically, what happens if the automated process fails? So maybe Tojet can do another episode describing that.
That would be good. So next we had a comment on Clacky's show 3317 reading a manifesto towards a cooperative technology movement, and Aaron C says raises an excellent point. I'm just commenting to say that this manifesto and subsequent show make an excellent point. The free software community as it stands has good and is, as discussed, well-guarded principles with no compromise. While this is admirable, it's also what's killing the movement. Like language, all movements must eventually morph or evolve over time or they die off. It's completely acceptable to maintain a core set of tenets, of course, but having a figurehead who uses the internet in bizarre and arcane ways makes free software more like a paranoid nest of conspiracy theorists than it does to make technological progress by freeing the user from the constraints of mega corporations. Free software is inevitably political, but the mocking and jeering of people who still use proprietary software scared off companies and created the open source movement, which, if anything, made it easier for mega corporations to profit off the collectivized free labor of programmers who cared enough to donate their time. To me, the free software stalwarts were the progenitors of their own worst enemy, which is open source. They allowed it to happen themselves and fostered the likes of Google and Facebook. The FSF concentrates too much on acting like a single state communist party with its attention focused on creating a cult of personality around Stallman. I agree the roots of the movement today should reflect more social needs, creating software for the good of the people, even if that makes software socialist.
Well-reasoned argument.
Good one.
And if you disagree, record a show. InfoSec Security Podcast, News and Current Events by Trey. Kevin O'Brien says that he really liked the show. Further details are, it is great to hear about the podcasts you follow. I recognize many of them as shows I used to follow, though frankly, since retiring, I have been putting my energy into other matters. I'm turning 70 in a few months and have other priorities now.
Yep.
One of which is supplying HBR with a steady feed of shows.
Absolutely, yes, yes. That's a very happy about. We approve of, yes.
Yes. Then there are 7 comments for this show. Then anything on the news mail list?
There's nothing on the mailing list. Is there? Just the one, just me saying about this this episode, I think.
Yeah. And should we go on to the any other business? Because I have a rant. Well, I don't have a rant, but any other business? A lot. This month we've had a lot of shows coming in clusters. So back in the day, the queue was kind of a thing that was assigned to people, and then there were rules about if you do this, then that new host will do this, then that, and then we just left it up to the community, and that has turned out to be the best way to manage the queue, because there is no discussion about who submitted the show when, and somebody else's show got released before mine, and all that sort of stuff, because you pick the day that you pick. However, we have this continuous problem with HBR of the sawtooth effect. We get no shows, then we get a lot of shows, then we get a lot of shows, then it gradually drains off, and we have a call for shows, then we get a lot of shows, and then it gradually fades off, and we get a lot of shows, then we have no shows again. So that's nothing new. That is pretty much a common problem in, think of it like at a hydroelectric power station, where you've got a dam and you have no control over the amount of water that goes in. The only thing you can do is control the amount of water that comes out. So you, as a host, when you're submitting your HBR shows, we have guidelines up there that will help us spread out the shows so that there are slots in there available for new hosts that come along, or returning hosts, or somebody who's got a show. Because if you go to the calendar now, you see that there's the first available show is nearly in a month's time. And you're thinking to yourself, oh, a month's time, well, HBR must have loads of shows. But we still have over 250 available slots in this year, or 150 available slots in this year. So we do not have loads of shows. So what we ask, what we've done is written on the very top of the page when you upload some guidelines. First of all, that you need to have an audio recording ready before you pick a slot. And the reason for that is that's just what we've agreed. It's all fair that if you just can't randomly go and pick a slot and then go, oh, I will record it 5 minutes before the day. So you have to have your recording done. If that's not the case, if for any reason that doesn't apply, for example, the community news show, then that needs to be approved by the mailing list. And that goes for everybody, including me. So always try and fill any free slots that are coming up in the next 2 weeks. So if you go to the main page and you see a free slot in the next 2 weeks, then you pick those two. You pick that slot first. You pick the first slot that you can, because we need to we have a lead time to populate the feed. So that's important to do that. But then if the queue is filling up, as in the first 2 weeks are full, then consider leaving some free slots for new contributors. So if there's a free slot, the first 2 weeks are full, and then there's a free slot in the third week, then leave it there. That's fine, because more than likely somebody will look at the queue and go, hey, there's a free slot, and I'll pop my show in there. If you see that there are 5 free slots in the third week, then you could put it on the Friday, or put it on the Thursday or something like that, and start filling it from Friday, Thursday, Wednesday, leaving that free slot there. Am I making sense so far, Dave?
Indeed so, yes.
So if you have a non-urgent show, and you know the queue is in a pretty healthy state, so that you know the first 2 weeks are full and the third week is beginning to fill up, then go down and find a week that doesn't have any shows in it at all. So right now, Operator and Ahuka are running some series, and what they do is they're following the, well, actually Ahuka is, if you're uploading a series of shows, consider scheduling one every 2 weeks. Now, what I want to do there is clarify that to mean if any host is submitting more than one show, then there should be 2 weeks between their shows. So Ahuka will pick the Fridays, and then 10 days later will pick a Friday, and 10 days later will pick a Friday. So that's how that works. And Operator posted a wedge of shows one after the other, which in fairness was the way we did it back in the day. And I asked and got his permission to move those out. But frankly, that was a pain in the ass. Just operate, nothing to do with Operator. It's just if people are submitting a load of shows, then we should have a better way of doing that, that we can space them out automatically. So I've been thinking about that as well. Possibly having something in, change something in the workflow that, based on your email address, you will get a notification in the email link saying, you've selected this day, but you've already got this show scheduled on this day. Do you want to pick this day instead? And there are cases where people might not want to do that. These are guidelines. For example, you have a show scheduled, say Ahuka has a show scheduled here, and then something comes up that's very important, you know, that's time critical, and it must be released on the date of the next available slot, then that's a reasonable thing to do, is to override that guideline and just post the show. But most people who are uploading shows are not aware of these guidelines and just post them one after the other. And what that has the effect of creating a logjam in the queuing system, so that there's no space for shows coming in. And then people will look, oh, there's 3 months, so I'm not going to wait another week after that. I'm going to post my show in the first available slot, which is just pushing the logjam more and more and more. I don't know if I've explained the issue correctly.
It's a hard one to explain, isn't it? It's obvious when you're dealing with it, but maybe not so much when you're trying to give the advice as to how to avoid the problem. You know, it's a difficult one. It's a difficult one. But yeah, I can't think of a better way of putting it than is written here, though, I have to say.
Yeah, yeah. So the way I like the queue to be is that 2 weeks are full, and then the third week is filling up. That, and then, you know, it should be tapering off after that. 3 weeks, you know, so 2 weeks full, the third week would still have one free slot in it. The fourth week might have two free slots in it. The fifth week, three, and then the remaining weeks would have one show posted. You know, that kind of thing. That's because we keep, I don't know how many weeks, 12 weeks on the main page that you can pick. And then if you pick a date for any time in the next year, it gets listed in the also schedule section. Mm-hmm. So, and why is that important? Just, this particularly tends to happen when we do a call for shows and people submit shows. So say we have five people who are interested in submitting shows, and then they go to the queue and they see that the queue is now full, then of those we might lose three because they go, oh, well, I really don't need to submit a show. And then worse, the next time they hear a call for shows, they're going, ah, well, you know, by the time I put a show together, it'll be full again. So steady and try and keep the queue under control.
Yes.
I've certainly heard or seen people mention in Mastodon stuff, things like, well, yeah, I was thinking of submitting a show and I was going to choose such and such a slot, but that means it won't come out until, you know, 2 months down the road or something, you know. And if you got yourself to the point where you psyched yourself up to the point where you can actually produce something, where you've been quite reluctant before, then that's not a fun thing.
Yeah, but on the other hand, having an empty queue because somebody forgets, oh, and then you come back to it. We could have this discussion next month, and the queue could be entirely empty. We might not get a show right up until the next month. When is so we're about half full between now and next month. But we've had months, Dave, where we didn't get anything coming in. You know, the queue was completely full, and then people stopped submitting shows. But really, all of this should be summarized, me waffling on again, down to the point where it is the person submitting the shows who also needs to take responsibility for keeping the queue from being completely messed up.
Yep. Well, the other factor is that a block of shows from the same host can, you know, there may be variety in that block, but often it wouldn't be quite as varied as the normal state of play on HBR, and the variety is one of the things that attracts people quite a lot. So, you know, trying to ensure that as much variety as possible is maintained is a desirable thing. So that's another reason why you shouldn't do that.
So I'm thinking of proposing a change to the mail list, saying if you're uploading a series of shows, considering scheduling one every 2 weeks. I think that should be clarified because a series of shows, somebody might assume that to be, for example, taking a hookah who schedules the shows once every 2 weeks, all of them. You might have a series on, I have three shows on this topic, and then I've got three shows on another topic. So I'll post on the Monday from topic A and on Tuesday from topic B. So rather than meaning that, what it should read is, if you're uploading multiple shows, considering scheduling one every 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yep.
Or even stronger, it would be better to schedule one every 2 weeks.
Yep, that seems reasonable.
Okay, I'll send out a mail to the mail list about that and see what people think.
Okie doke. So in any other business, I just wanted to say that having written a script which can go backwards through the list of shows and upload them to archive.org, I've been trying to do, I've been doing about five a day when I get a chance. So the sum total since the last community news, I've uploaded 96 in the range of show 1 to 870. So we have everything from 700 to 870 now uploaded. So and keep that going, then we should be able to clear the backlog before too long.
That is great news. That's great news.
And the other thing is the tags and summaries. I've done a few myself this month. I try and do a few at least. It's not always possible because life gets busy, but I've done seven. So we've got 377 which still need a summary or tags or both.
You're chugging away through them, Dave.
Gradually, slow and surely. Or whatever.
I just added a comment to the Linux in Laws episode to ask them to submit the names. Show notes, yes. Reminder, stuff you need to know. HBR will stop as a podcast if there are not enough shows. We do not syndicate shows that are not produced by HBR. You are agreeing to license your show CC by SA. This is important, people. You need to have the copyright for everything in your show. You have permission to redistribute the show in its entirety. Your show will not be monitored. Your show will be signaled as containing explicit content. You determine where the schedule your show will be released. Use UTF-8 intent, or at least try to. Show be held by an international, heard by an international audience. We also need emergency shows, and you will no longer be allowed to edit HPR pages on Wikipedia. That's the stuff you need to know. All of it is important. Any of it that you don't do means more work for us, Dave, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Sure, and we don't like work, Dave. No, we don't.
We have our lives rather than be totally dedicated to HPR.
Yeah, no, all messing aside, people, these guidelines lost me about 12 hours of work this month. That's how much, and admittedly, normally it doesn't, we don't get the color of that, but it just so happened that this month that cost me 12 hours over the total month, an hour here and an hour and a half there, emailing 15 minutes here, getting replies during the day. So it is not a trivial amount. You need to, you're uploading stuff and you're putting us, the entire project, on the line. So yeah, please spend the time to, you know, just think before you upload, make sure that you're doing what you're supposed to do. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Indeed.
Very, very school teachery this month, Dave. Almost got into me. Right. Detention.
Well, yes, we don't want to be putting people in detention, you know, so.
Not at all. Go write a show. That's your homework for next week. Pick a topic and submit it to HBR. And yes, the title is Anything That Is of Interest to Hackers.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So, yes. I'm desperately trying to break my failure to produce many shows that COVID has done to me. So, but yeah, two shows just been added to the queue, one by my good friend McNallu and one by myself. So
saw that with interest, actually.
We will attempt to get back into doing regular shows again. I don't know if it's the lockdowns and all that stuff mess people up in different ways, you know. But there you go.
Yeah, hopefully we're coming out of it. I've got my vaccination this month, so
yeah. And you got a single vaccination, unlike us.
I did, yeah.
So and so, you have to go back for a second one.
But yeah, and then 2 days later they cancelled it here. They're no longer giving that vaccination out to people. Yeah,
wow, that's all very strange.
Yeah.
They run out or something.
No, the risk of blood clots is fine. So, you know, they can afford to lose people of my age in the population. They can't afford to lose the other people because they have to pay the pensions of the politicians, you know.
Well, right. Yeah. Because I got AstraZeneca. My son got his first shot this week, and he got the Pfizer. The AstraZeneca has got association with blood clots, but not if you're as old as I am, and the Pfizer doesn't have such an association, so the youngsters get that one. So yeah, there's all sorts of weird things going on.
Yeah, but then again, you look at it, and the risk of getting a blood clot in itself is equal to that of getting struck by lightning. So okay, and even then it's treatable, and then you're into again getting struck by lightning if it gets complicated. So, and on the other hand, you know, everybody's got to die sometime.
Indeed. On that happy note,
submit your shows now before it's too late, folks. I live for immortality on archive.org.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Don't die yet, says my wife. And don't die all at the same time. That's the plan.
So spread it out a bit. That's it. Yeah.
Yeah. Spread it out.
The it's all right.
What did you say?
I can't deal with the kids on my own after that. Well, we'll see then.
I'm recording this, you know. Say hello to the HBR audience because I'm not editing this out.
Oh, hi.
Okay. Bye. Tune in tomorrow for another exciting episode of
The Hacker
Public Radio.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license.